All right, welcome to this interview today. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon.com, where we can have uncensored conversations about things that matter. And today we've got a great guest for you, someone I've interviewed on the InfoWars Network before when I was a guest host there. And interviewing him here today for the first time for you, his name is John Wadsworth, and he's got a great channel on Brighteon.com. It's exclusive to Brighteon. It's called New Patriot. So if you just look for him on Brighteon, you'll find his videos. He's got amazing commentary. He's connected with some of the folks in California that are working on the California new or the new California state project, such as Paul Preston that I interviewed last week. So Mr. Wadsworth, it's an honor to have you on. I really appreciate your videos. I'm a fan of your commentary. Welcome to the interview.
Thank you for having me, Mike.
Absolutely. It's great to have you on. We had a great conversation on InfoWars, a week ago or so, and I wanted to have you back here. So let's start with the news out of Boston, where we have a Boston University laboratory that has created a new deadly COVID strain with an 80% kill rate in mice. Apparently, this is just being reported. The UK Daily Mail has covered it, and then it's been spreading across other media outlets. And so the first big question everybody's having is why are you building more bioweapons? Haven't you learned anything after these last 2 years? So what do you think, John? What's going on?
Well, who could have seen this coming, Mike? I mean, here we are in false flag season, right? We're all anticipating it. We're waiting for the other shoe to drop, you know? We know that we're coming up against the midterms here, and this election season is, you know, well, we always say that it's like the most critical in history, but really this, there's so much going on in the world right now, and what happens in the United States affects the entire world. So yeah, perfect timing. And it looks like they have the narrative all ready to go too, the whole safe, proven and effective thing that we heard before, you know, when they hadn't done any safety testing and it wasn't proven. And it was not only not effective, it was proved to be deadly. So, you know, yeah, this it looks like that's what we're looking at.
Well, and here's the weird thing, because I thought that under Trump, or maybe it was Obama and then another stage under Trump, that gain of function research was banned in the United States. And that's why EcoHealth Alliance and Fauci with the NIAID using NIH money had to bypass that restriction and call it some kind of a national emergency and ship it off to Wuhan in order to do the research in the Wuhan lab, right? So they circumvented the restrictions. Well, now we learn from this UK Daily Mail article that in Boston, scientists removed a spike from the Omicron variant. They attached it to the original Wuhan strain of SARS-CoV-2, and then they infected mice with this new hybrid, you could call it a chimeric strain, and it killed 80% of the mice. And it's like, isn't that gain of function research? Isn't that a felony crime? I mean, shouldn't these people be arrested at this point? What's going on?
Absolutely. Yeah, they're creating a weapon. Why on earth, for what possible humanitarian reason would they be going about a procedure like that? And, you know, you mentioned, you know, other countries like China, and this is why they need puppet countries and cooperative, you know, totalitarian dictatorships, so they can offshore their crimes.
Right.
Basically.
Even in Ukraine, too, the biolabs.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Big time. There's so much illicit activity that goes on in countries where these deals are set up.
But also, you know, if you think about this, haven't they set up a narrative for a highly deadly strain to be, quote, accidentally released in Boston? It's like, well you know, it slipped out, yeah, and everybody's dying.
Yeah. And then, of course, you have the airplane hub and you have, you know, all the travel paths and things go out from there. And something like this could just easily create a scare and mandates. And that's my concern, Mike. I've just been waiting for this is the, you know, I think a lot of Americans they think that whole COVID thing is behind us and the vaccine mandates, I call them non-vaccine mandates, are behind us. And I'm convinced they're not. I think the plan is 10 years of pandemics, and it's not if, but when. So we need to be thinking about what our response is going to be to that.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, so far people have been able to just say no, even though saying no can be quite costly. You might lose your job. You might lose your children in some states if you're parents and so on. But you've always had the option to say no. Well, it seems like part of this plan is to create such a large emergency, such an emotional emergency. Mm-hmm. Perhaps that's what this is all about. 80% death rate, you know, at least in mice so far. I don't know if that translates into humans, but if they can create a big enough emergency, then they can say, well, you have to take it. Now it's got to be mandatory. You think they could get away with that now, or is there just too much resistance to it?
I think that is that has the ingredients for a recipe of that. It has all the ingredients for a violent situation. You add the fear, and then, and we saw even people got angry. I mean, you know, among the vaccinated, the jabbed crowd, they weren't just in fear. Fear was one of the emotions, but there was a genuine anger and almost disgust at the unvaccinated. You know, and this is exactly the type of thing that created the stage for what Hitler did. You know, Hitler actually started out with eliminating, you know, germs and stuff like that, and getting the rats out of the hospitals, and had this. The Germans are like neat freaks. I mean, it's a cultural, you know, characteristic. They're very clean. And so this was the whole language that was used to eventually vilify the Jewish people. And I think that is how the unvaccinated, or those who are not willing to comply, are the setup. I mean, it's clear to me. And then, Mike, you add to this too, that, you know, on September 12th, Joe Biden signed an executive order that basically funded what he called, and I'd never heard this term before, but what he called the bioeconomy. And that might sound, they kind of painted it as a benign thing, but I'm looking at, wait a minute, a when have we had a bioeconomy, and why do we need an executive order to mandate these things that circumvent the legislative process? It seems to me that this comes right on the back of Joe Biden making a multi-billion dollar commitment to genomic surveillance.
Uh-huh.
So right. I just think, man, yeah, can you see what's coming here?
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, all of this leads into just rank transhumanism too, because keep pushing more and more of the vaccines, more and more of these alterations. And then, you know, CRISPR technology, which was part of what Biden was funding, they want to modify the food, they want to modify the animals, and ultimately they want to modify you.
Yes. And I think it has a lot to do with creating designer citizen slaves and managing the human livestock, even to the point of culling the human livestock. That's part of livestock management, right? Is culling.
Good point.
You know, if you have too many of one species or, you know, whatever, then you cull that, you know, so you breed the stock that has the characteristics that are desirable to you. So what type of characteristics would be desirable if you're a globalist, you know, elite
obedience.
Dictator, right?
Obedience.
So, obedience, yes, yeah.
Right.
Yep.
And also, of course, not being masculine at all, the feminization of everybody.
Oh, yeah, yep. You know, it's just amazing, the conditioning for this, Mike, the whole trans thing. I mean, I from the beginning, I thought that is a setup for people being prepared to receive transhumanism, the whole transgender thing, right? So when they make trans cool, then all of a sudden, you know, Klaus Schwab announces that the fourth industrial revolution, which is synonymous with the global currency reset, which is synonymous with transhumanism, it turns out, right? So we're in dangerous territory here.
Absolutely. All right, let's shift gears, although it's kind of a segue. We're talking about robotic kamikaze flying bombs, basically kamikaze drones now.
Yeah.
So Russia reportedly used quite a number, dozens of so-called kamikaze drones striking targets across Ukraine in the last 24 hours or so, including some strikes in Kiev. Now, I think these are game changers in terms of the battlefield. They don't carry high explosives. It's not like, it's not like a 1,000-pound bomb or anything, but they are small. They're hard to shoot down. They're hard to track. And they can target small groups of soldiers. So what's your take on the future of warfare and essentially robotic, you know, flying death machines?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, very good question, because it's almost like we're, you know, it's a Star Wars thing. We're into it. It would be like a science fiction movie if you tried to explain it to somebody like 10 or 15 years ago. But that's a great question. So we're on the verge of something that's even more dangerous than just the use of drones, but how about autonomous drones,
right,
that can make their own decision over who lives and who dies? And they rolled these out, as far as I know. Who knows if they've been used in secret or not, but we know they were used in the war between, in the last 2 years, between Armenia and Azerbaijan. And then they were used immediately after that, probably a second generation being field tested in Libya. So, and I don't know, I haven't seen that these are like autonomous drones. I don't know if they're controlled by, you know, human operators, or if they're just programmed to go on a flight path and do their thing. But when you talk about autonomous killing drones, we're into some really very dangerous technologies here. And even technologies that can turn on, you know, their own people, or the good guys, not the programmers, right? So yeah, we're definitely, warfare is changing. And it's the genie is out of the bottle here, Mike. I mean, yeah, all those people that said Russia has used up all their weapons and they can't win, and they're, they're getting slaughtered on the battlefield. Not quite. I mean, you know, Ukraine doesn't have a chance. I mean, they just really don't. They don't even have nuclear weapons. They were a republic in the Soviet Union, but they don't have a snowball's chance in hell, you know? I mean, so it's really the West that is sacrificing the Ukrainians. I mean, the poor people have, you know, really don't want to be in this war, but it's all about this globalist agenda.
Yeah. Well, I want to ask you more about these autonomous weapon systems, because of course there could be different payloads on these drones. So some of the payloads could be chemical weapons or biological weapons. So they could drop, let's take this Boston, you know, bioweapon thing, mm-hmm, that they just created, this chimeric 80% kill rate. What if they load a bunch of that into an aerosolized dispenser on the bottom of one of these drones, and it's not programmed to slam into a target, but just to fly over a target and dispense? You know, basically, they have drones on farms that spray pesticides herbicides, right? So they just run a flight pattern over a farm field. They can do the same thing over cities. And it's probably already happened, by the way.
Yeah, true. And, you know, actually, you know, some drones are so small too, and they're difficult to see. If it's a small drone, very difficult to see.
Right.
And they're also very quiet, and they could do it at night too for something like this. So
exactly.
Very dangerous technology.
Well, and then did you see the video, I don't know, maybe 10 days ago or a couple of weeks ago, of some Chinese military group had a pretty powerful drone, like a transport drone, that was carrying a robot dog that's armed. And so
I did see that,
and drops off the dog. The robot dog then, you know, starts creeping around with its gun, and the drone flies off, I guess, to get another robot dog. I mean, you're talking about
to go pick up another one, right?
Science fiction drones transporting drones that are armed to kill and hunt down humans. And we're talking like the airborne Terminator brigade here.
Yeah, this is really serious stuff. Of course, we've watched, you know, Boston Dynamics and developing these dogs, you know, in our own country right now. Turns out the Chinese, of course, they have them too. And it's sad that their drone technology is way more advanced than ours too. So, you have to be thinking, and I'm sure you are, is how do you defeat these things, you know, and what is the plan? I mean, what is the citizen supposed to do? I don't have any trust in the government because we've been taken over, but the citizens actually need to be thinking about civil defense. And, you know, well, I don't know if it's going to be a net thing you can tangle them in, or where, if they have a vulnerable spot where you can shoot them with a high enough caliber projectile, or if maybe a microwave weapon, you know, that you can make out of a, what would people do? Say if you were in a guerrilla war and it was up to the citizens to resist, and say an occupying Chinese force, for instance, what would you do going up a force that had these robot dogs?
Yeah, well, first off, you have to have thermal camouflage, right? Because I think that the robot dogs have thermal cameras that are pretty easy to spot people. So you need thermal cover or thermal camouflage. And, you know, so space blankets, but painted with camo, things like that. That's one option.
Thermal cloak. Yeah. The thing about drones, period, is they can be arrayed with so many different types of sensors.
True.
And then even linked to like say a hive of drones or a swarm of drones. So you can have one that's up close and personal and doing an infrared scan that is connected to another one that's doing an overhead optical scan. Right. And, you know, so yeah, it's very dangerous technology. And I think that that we need to be thinking about what do you do about this? What are the citizens supposed to do? Because it is looking more and more likely, you know, people, of course, I talk a lot about, I've been talking a lot about nuclear warfare, you know, recently, of course, but, and at the beginning, people were saying, well, that sure sounds apocalyptic. And yeah, it is apocalyptic because we're talking about nuclear war. And it seems like along the path of escalation that every single increment that we reach, that's, you know, further and further toward the full-on nuclear conflict, at every step, people seem to, in their minds, normalize it and say, well, it's just not going to happen. No one would ever do that. And
look at history.
I know. It's just unbelievable, you know, so, that people, they can't process this.
Well, yeah, exactly. And they don't think about what could happen. So these drones that were unleashed in Ukraine were apparently built by Iran. At least that's what's being reported.
That's what, and, you know,
Iran is not the manufacturing hub of the world, not by a long shot. And by the way, I'm wondering if this is some of Obama's money to Iran. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like elections have consequences. But guess who's the manufacturing hub of the world? It's China. Now, imagine this, John. What if China loads up, you know, because China can mass manufacture these things, whereas if you have human resistance soldiers and they get killed, you can't just replace them on a factory floor. But these drones, what if China builds a million of them, loads like 5,000 onto each container, loads these containers onto merchant ships, sails those merchant ships within a couple miles of the California coastline, and the tops open up and out fly a million drones. And their mission is just to just kill anything that looks like a person. I mean, that's not
that
science fiction
like
anymore.
A Chinese, or communist Chinese. Yeah, it's talk about a force multiplier.
Right.
You know, I mean, and it's totally possible. It is. And not only that, they could be sent out there to, you know, they could fly out there. And when they're down on power, they could drop down and just recharge, you know, with solar or something, and or with some sort of a, you know, beam, if that's kind of technology is available. And their distance could theoretically be sort of unlimited. And they could be programmed with different missions and fly in swarms. And, you know, think about that. And how much more, what a force multiplier that is, that you wouldn't need nearly so many people. You wouldn't have to feed them. You wouldn't have to deal with casualties. And you wouldn't have to deal with, you know, the possibility of the citizens back at home protesting all their citizens getting killed overseas. So, and this is, they have the tech. I mean, China leads the world in drone technology.
Absolutely.
So I think in the civilian sector and the military sector. So that is really a possibility. And then, you know, their drones come in all different sizes. I mean, so there are drones that are the size of a fly, you know.
Yeah,
and surveillance, you know, drones.
This reminds me of, there's a passage in the book of Revelation that talks, I think, yeah, it's in Revelation, that talks about the, the locusts that have, what is it, like the tails that sting like a scorpion or something?
Tails. Yeah.
They could be drones, you know, like little micro drones.
I mean, yeah, that's entirely possible. Yeah.
Just, I don't know, this sci-fi infestation. But the thing is, we're no longer at war in a conventional sense in the world. Now, you saw that Joe Biden last week, he signed this order that is crippling China's semiconductor industry. And I mean, it was an act of war on the scale of, let's say, dislodging Russia from the SWIFT system. Okay. So China's semiconductor industry has been really brought to its knees with just one order, because no one will sell them parts or supplies from anywhere else around the world anymore. And no Americans can work for the Chinese semiconductor industry. I'm wondering if the US, some element of the Pentagon or the State Department, is realizing that China is building an army of drones, and this is their way to stop the drone building, if they can.
Yeah, that's an interesting theory, and it's entirely possible. There's also this aspect that it could be it could actually be an attack on Russia. And I made the comment that really Russia is kind of like, and China are both like where we were at when World War II broke out, because in, namely in Russia, I said Russia is a vertically integrated country, meaning they don't have to really go outside for supplies. They're rich natural resources, and it's a largest country by landmass in the world. But they do lack one thing, actually, and that's microchips. So that's the only thing I can think of that where they have to go outside to procure. Mm-hmm. So this could have been a response to that too. So
indeed, very much
both
so.
Both those things are entirely possible. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, given enough time, Russia has the raw intelligence and materials to make microchips, but it does take many years to catch up if you don't have the real modern equipment. All right, let's move on to the protests in Paris over the weekend. There were thousands of Parisians that took to the streets, and quite a lot of clashes with police. They were protesting their inability to afford to live now that prices are rising so dramatically across Europe with energy scarcity and so on, and also food inflation. This is the first, I think, big protest that we've seen, but of course not the last. What do you think is going to happen in Europe over this coming winter, John?
Well, I tell you, it gets mighty cold in Europe. I mean, yeah, you know, I lived in a third world country in several different third world countries in Europe. My family lived in Bulgaria as missionaries there for 1 year in a village actually on the Black Sea. And it got so cold there in the wintertime, you know, which is actually not that far from Ukraine where the whole war is happening, but on the Black Sea. It got so cold and we could only afford to heat a few rooms in the house. So in Europe, that's what people are going to be doing. They're going to say, we can't heat the whole house. So we're going to heat the kitchen and maybe one other room. That's where this is going. It got so cold in Bulgaria, we couldn't afford to heat the kitchen. And my wife's mop froze and stuck to the floor. I'll never forget that. I mean, it got cold. And the buildings out there are different. They don't have insulation. Their construction is built around the principle of thermal mass.
Right.
So, you know, the walls are engineered to have a certain thickness. So when the sun comes out, like it'll heat up the wall, and then the walls will radiate that heat, you know, over the next 12 hours or whatever inside the building. And they strike this balance between keeping, you know, the heat in and the cold out. And it's opposite from what we do here with insulation. But so energy, I mean, they have to stay warm, and more people die. And this isn't just a fact. I mean, more people die from cold each year than from heat. People die from heat too in Europe every year, but more people die from cold. And so that's what we're looking at. And as far as the food goes, and you know, so we're looking at people are skipping meals. They can't, the portions are getting smaller. Foods are becoming unavailable. And the globalists want to have everybody eating bugs, you know?
Right.
And there's, I don't know if you've seen this headline out, I think it came out today, is that one of the things about bugs in general is that they're really not digestible no matter what you do to them to humans, some of them. I'm talking more like, there's some that are actually, but there are some that aren't, and they actually pose a risk of things like spinal cancer developing and different types of cancers and things like this. So, I mean, so what I think is going to happen is the infrastructure collapses, unrest occurs. I mean, the riots, yeah, when people get hungry, they riot. I mean, this is what actually started the revolution in Romania, which was critical in bringing down, you know, communism. But, and of course, the Arab Spring and all that. So,
yeah.
Food riots are going to become a much greater thing than they, I think, ever have been in modern times.
Well, we saw a minister of one region of Germany had come out and said that anybody who protests rising costs is a fascist, which doesn't make any sense at all. No, the fascists are the government people who caused this problem.
That sounds like something the Biden administration would say, by the way. Could it be they're singing from the same sheet of music?
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, the point is they're going to try to criminalize anybody who protests against this. So you're supposed to just freeze and starve and shut the hell up, basically, is the message from your government in Europe. And isn't this setting the stage for real revolutions? What if you start to add you know, financial collapse into this, because the Bank of England is on the ropes, the pension funds or the so-called gilts in Britain are they're on the verge of collapse right now. The euro is not looking good. Frankly, the whole German economy is about to collapse. The industrial base of Europe is about to collapse. What do you do when you're starving, freezing, you lost your job, you lost your business, and you're called a fascist because you're not happy about it?
And your money's worthless.
Yeah, and your money's worthless, yeah. Right.
Yeah, so I think they're headed for major civil unrest, and I think it's going to take on two different dynamics. One will be this this force that that is against the government, right? And another one will be what's going to happen with this the illegal immigrant population that George Soros brought in there, and they just opened up their gates and let the people in. And they're not going to be able to feed these people, clothe these people, provide jobs for these people, keep them on welfare. And those people, they don't have a lot. Most of those people come from countries where they don't have a tradition of all obeying the government. Like the Germans are actually pretty obedient, people. They're for centuries. They're just alles in Ordnung. You know, they're like everything in order. And they just very rare when Germans get out of line, they just kind of do what they're told historically. Now, that's not meant to, say anything negative about Germans, but I mean, that's the culture though. Everything is very regimented. I mean, it really is. It's a very regimented society, but the demographic of people that have come in, they don't share that culture. So that's my point, is what is going to happen with the people that when they don't have the food, the money, or the clothing?
Yeah. Well, there's already a lot of sexual assaults on German women.
Yeah.
A lot of the migrants, that's going on right now. And apparently, if you protest that, you're also a racist.
A fascist again. Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course. So, yeah. And that was by design too. It's like everything that is happening right now seems to me to be a coordinated effort to bring down Western civilization.
It sure does. Well, along those lines in the UK, and I covered this, I don't know, a few days ago, I think it's 44% of the doctors there in the NHS hospitals plan to leave those hospitals by next year. 44%. I mean, nearly half the doctors are getting out of the system. So they're talking about the risk of a total collapse of the government-run socialist healthcare system. And then in Germany, just now, this is news from today, German Health Minister Karl Lauterbach claimed that the hospitals in Germany are about to shut down because of bankruptcy from having to pay much higher prices for electricity. So the hospitals can't afford to keep the lights on. Are you kidding me? And in the UK, they can't afford to pay the doctors enough to keep the doctors around. I mean, go ahead. Your thoughts.
Yeah. Oh, I think we're looking at like the dark ages. It really, I mean, there are times in history, we're used to the idea that civilization is constantly advancing, and we're not used to the idea that, well, periodically civilization goes back, like two steps forward, one step backward. This looks like we're getting set up. It's inevitable. I don't see how we avoid it, but civilization is going to go backward on a number of different levels, and starting with longevity. I mean, that's going to be affected this year within the next 12 months for sure. It's unavoidable. So I think civilization goes backward here. Then you add to that the world war component. And here's another thing too, Mike. What if, or how convenient it is that world war breaks out, and then right at the same time where these vaccine deaths just really, really kick in, and kind of that's sort of a smoke screen and, pop smoke on the real cause of death.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. And the energy shortage was self-inflicted, right? So they can't really blame anybody else. It's like they cut off Russia from the SWIFT system so that Russia couldn't even sell gas. And then, of course, somebody in the West blew up the Nord Stream pipelines. We have our suspicions of who that might be. But these are all Western countries destroying their own energy supply, destroying their fertilizer, destroying their food supply. I mean, destroying their hospitals through all of this. The gas prices in Germany are going to go up 38% starting December 1st. That's just 3 months after the last increase, which was also a very large amount. So if your energy prices go up, let's say basically 10% a month, okay, it doesn't take long before you can't keep the lights on anywhere. And that's kind of what we're about to see.
It is. I mean, so yeah, what are they going to do? And then you add on to that, well, say lights. What happens when they run out of light bulbs? I mean, that's down the road here, but all the things they need in addition to energy, all the things they need for life are dependent on energy too. So the manufacturing capability, supply chains, I mean, they really are going to go into the dark ages. I don't see any way around this. And I think what happens there is like a remnant survives and a lot of people don't make it. Maybe my view is too dark on that, but I just don't see any other option there. I don't see anything coming to their rescue. And this also creates a climate of desperation. And this could be the trigger that actually causes the Western countries, Germany in particular, to make the decision to know we have to invade Ukraine and go further. We have to secure the energy fields and for ourselves.
And they've done it Adolf before. Hitler back from the grave. I mean, that's what he was doing in Russia.
Well, it is. Yeah, because Germany didn't have any energy. I mean, that's why they went to North Africa.
Yeah, going for the oil fields. Yeah.
And Romania too, at Ploiești and all that. So they've done that before. It's not like it hasn't happened. So that is a very real possibility. If they play that card, if they decide to do that, that'll probably happen with, you know, before winter really sets in.
Yeah, it's just it's extraordinary to me that the idiotic leaders of Germany, and this is not speaking of the people of Germany, there are a lot of great people, but the leaders of Germany will have destroyed Europe three times in a little over a century.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. Yeah.
Just one country.
Yeah, it's one country. I mean, and if you're a Russian, by the way, what you're doing, you know, if you start to see the Western countries, Germany in particular, mobilizing, looking east, you're going, we've seen this before, you know.
Right.
Not only with, you know, World War One, World War Two, but, you know, with Napoleon. And so far, countries haven't been very successful in invading Russia in wintertime.
That never turns out to be a great idea.
But that may be exactly what happens. They may actually, you know, these people, Jens Stoltenberg and all that, they may decide that, and they may use a false flag to do it. They may come up with some way to say, no, a proxy war isn't good enough. Giving them HIMARS, giving them all these weapons, that's not going to work. We need to go secure those oil feed, those gas fields for ourselves. And that would be the only thing I can see that will prevent them from going into the dark ages. Of course, that's presuming they win.
Well, I saw a very credible analysis a couple of months ago. I don't recall the source, but I remember it was a meticulous analysis that the entire British army would last about 3 weeks against Russia in terms of the casualties that Russia is inflicting upon Ukraine in real time. So there just aren't enough British troops to be effective at all. And then, okay, you add in Polish troops, you add in German troops and so on, French troops. If you can even get them to go fight in the winter against Russia, which is always a suicide mission anyway, just look at history. But I don't think they can beat Russia, especially at Russia's doorstep.
I totally agree. It's a fool's errand. It's just not possible. So what could they do? And they see, here's the danger where it really kicks in is that is when they say, well, we can't do that. Nobody could do that. So we have to use nuclear weapons.
Well, so that doesn't solve their problem either. You start nuking the gas fields, you know?
Yeah. But they, I mean, it's just the escalation. I mean, let me just kind of flip gears a little bit here too, is that I've from the beginning of this conflict, I've said, the danger really kicks in when it starts to look like Russia's losing. But it hasn't looked like that. I mean, the Western media makes it look like that, but they're not. And it doesn't look like that. If it ever starts to really look like Russia's losing, there is no question that they'll use nuclear weapons. That's what they're there for. So, and just the West does seem to keep pushing them in that direction.
Yeah, exactly right. Like they're trying to provoke it. Okay. Let's for the last series of questions for you, then let's shift gears to America. Now, what do you think is in store? You know, you and I are recording this, a couple of weeks before the election. It's It's the late evening of October 17th right now. Lakshin's coming up, I guess. What is that? 3 weeks? 3 weeks away.
Right.
So any analysis of, number one, do we make it to election day with our ability to vote still intact? And then what do you think happens in the midterms and then after that?
I really think this time, well, first of all, we're definitely in false flag season. Let's presume we have the elections. Let's go with that for a second. I don't think many on the conservative side are going to accept the results of these elections. I'm not. I mean, I mean, nothing has been done to correct the systemic problems from 2020. We're still using the same machines. It's just that the system has not been fixed. So how can the results of these elections be trusted? And so I think that puts us at great risk of civil conflict. And I'm sure there will be some, you know, say conservative victory. You have to have some, right? But I expect if we have the elections, there will be the same degree of fraud and corruption. And that's if we even get to the elections, right? So, but here we are in false flag season. We, for the rest of this month, NATO is running nuclear attack drills.
True.
I mean, so up until like, October 30th, right? So that's like a week before the election. So, you know, that is the most, talk about a provocative thing when the world is just, on eggshells here with a nuclear threat, and countries are handing out potassium iodide and they're, you know, mapping out their fallout shelters and all this type of stuff. And then NATO decides it's a great time to have a nuclear, you know, attack drill. So, and if you're Russia, you'll see, well, how are we going to know that? How do we know that's not real? So when they load up a nuclear bomb or missile onto an airplane and start flying it, you know, near the Russian border around Kaliningrad or wherever, Russia has no way of really knowing, is that a dummy or a real one? And so it's so provocative. It's so dangerous. But also we have that in the next few weeks coming up before the elections. So. Right. I personally think the thing goes nuclear at some point. I can't say when, and I'm not going to pick any dates, but it's clear to me that that's their intent. And it's also clear to me, and this is just my opinion, it's clear to me that the Biden administration is actually intent on using violence against our own citizens. So that's my view on that too. So add that into the whole election thing too.
Well, right. And that's becoming a universal thing among Western nations that once condemned, let's say, the former Soviet Union or China or North Korea, they were condemned for lack of human rights. But now we have innocent, peaceful protesters rotting in jails in D.C. from January 6th.
Yeah.
Right. And we've got the FBI politicized, going after arresting people who pray in front of abortion centers, for God's sake. You know, just uttering a prayer makes you a felon.
And Mike, school board, school boards petitioning, the government to have the parents classified as domestic terrorists.
Right.
For objecting to the whole trans, agenda.
Yep. That was all just coordinated with the DOJ.
Yes.
Even initiated by the DOJ is what the evidence currently shows. Right. So if you don't agree with the mutilation of children, then you are, quote, an extremist, or you're a danger, you're anti-government or whatever. I don't know. They'll come up with the right terms. And then, they're going to try to declare war on you. But couldn't, on the good news side, if this election goes off, is allowed to happen, let's say, and there are several states, maybe 20 plus, that have passed and enforced new laws for election integrity because they had Republican legislatures that pass a lot of laws over the last 2 years. What if the GOP takes the House and the Senate and puts Biden in a position where he's a lame duck president and kind of puts the tyranny on pause for a little bit? Is that a possible positive outcome?
I doubt it. I think I doubt it personally. So I doubt it because I think they know that if they allow the normal democratic process to go ahead, they lose. And I think that we really do have a totalitarian dictatorship right now. And, the history of totalitarian dictatorships is that once they achieve power, They don't give it up without violence, I'm sorry to say. But usually that's how it goes. So, and I'm not, and this is probably the first presidential administration, if you even want to call it that, that I think really is in the totalitarian dictatorship, you know, realm.
Right, right. Yeah, clearly, as they're going after citizens with the weaponized DOJ and the FBI and so on. In fact, even the DOJ is being encouraged to go after people who object to the transgenderism surgeries of children.
That is so wicked.
Yeah, isn't it? Right.
Yeah.
If you're out on the street saying, don't mutilate children, the DOJ will say, you're a terrorist or whatever. You know,
yeah,
you're an extremist. So,
man, eventually these corrections have to be made in our society that actually remove these people from their positions of power. And ideally that happens with elections and all that. But we have really crossed the Rubicon here. I mean, what are we to do? You know, the American citizens are going to be faced with a choice. Well, here, let me bring this subject up, Mike. So when at the end of World War II, when the Allies went in and liberated the concentration camps, I'm thinking of the Buchenwald camp system. They were horrified at what they saw. General Eisenhower went in there and he said, there is collective guilt here of the citizens because they didn't resist the tyranny when it rose up in Germany.
Right.
The electorate, the citizens, they were the only ones that could have stopped the rise of National Socialism, Nazism, but they didn't do it. And so the long and the short of it is he made the local townspeople, because this camp system was located not too far from, you know, from towns, he made them go in and walk among the dead and the dying, so that it would sink in that they have collective guilt. And we're not different from that. We have collective guilt. And and that's very awkward and uncomfortable to say, but we have collective guilt for somehow not correcting the evils that are present and so entrenched in our society, like mutilating children, like killing the unborn, killing the born after, you know, even if they're a month old, and the genital mutilation and just all kinds of other things. But our generation is faced with something I think that no other generation in American history has had to face, and that is the decline of an empire and the corruption, the moral corruption that goes along with that decline.
Yeah. Plus kamikaze drones.
Well, yeah, right.
and creepy robot dogs.
Probably foreign invasion too. I mean, yeah, it's all part and parcel here.
They'll probably have like Apple computer will probably roll out creepy robot dogs that seek out your children's genitals for automatic involuntary transgender surgery in the name of progressivism. And that'll be like an Apple thing.
They would call that progressive, wouldn't they?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, you know, hunting for children's genitals, robo dog, you know, Apple computer.
Yeah, exactly.
They would celebrate.
It's amazing what they call progressive. I mean, yeah, what they call progressivism is just so hideous. They really ought to come up with a new word for that. I mean, it's really just the progressive cancer of moral corruption in society.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, we've covered a lot of territory and already a lot of amazing thoughts. Can you tell people about your channel on Brighteon?
Okay, so it's brighteon.com/channels/newpatriot. And, you know, I've been making videos for a couple of years here. Haven't really put a lot of time into it, but it is, it's becoming more popular. And I think especially with your promoting it, Mike, and telling people about it. And I think it's resonating with people. I just started making videos, I think, because it seemed to me that nobody was really speaking out about the danger of these non-vaccine vaccines. There was far too much compliance. And that was kind of the beginning point, I think. And then of course I make a lot of comments, commentary on geopolitics and things like this. So I've got a perspective from living in some different countries and things like that. And I'm a student of history. So, I urge you, please go there and have a look at some of the videos, like, share, subscribe, and that'd be great.
Yeah. And I want to say too, that, you know, we built Brighteon for exactly the purpose that you are demonstrating. So the only way that you and I ever got to know each other here, this is the second interview that we've done, is because I saw your videos on Brighteon. And if more people would just do what you do, which is to say, hey, guess what? The change starts with me, right? Like, we are the white hats. You know what I mean? Like, we
exactly. Yeah. Mike, and this proves that it works, right? I mean, I had no way of targeting Mike Adams to like watch my videos, but hey, I just made these videos on this free speech platform and whoa, here I am. I mean, so yeah, people should speak out and don't allow your voices to be suppressed. That is we're in a cultural war and we have to make our voices heard and stand up for principles, you know?
I'm glad you mentioned that too, that you just got noticed. I guarantee you, for all of you listening, if you want to get noticed, just start making great videos and posting them on a consistent basis and it will happen organically. It really is that simple because, you know, Brighteon it's a small enough platform that your video doesn't get buried by 100,000 other videos in the first hour after you post it. Like, you can get noticed on Brighteon. That's
Mike. That is so true. I mean, I've seen it. It's absolutely true.
Yeah. But, I mean, you've had videos that have gone viral and, you know, you have to start with just one or two views because nobody knows your channel yet, but then it grows.
Yep. That's what happens. Yep. It's great. I mean, what if the founding fathers had this technology, Mike? Can you imagine? We're actually in a very good position here. I mean, if people who have, you know, timeless, eternal, spiritual principles, moral, you know, values, this is a platform you can get out there and influence people. Yeah. And it does make a difference. I mean, I get comments frequently that say, you know, thanks for making the videos. You're the reason that, you're inspiring me to keep going or things like this. I mean, you'll never know who you're going to reach too and what a difference it can make in your lives.
Yeah,
and I think that's actually the main reason I'm doing it now. I mean, when I, you know, once these comments come in and you realize that people, you're making a difference. And then I'm like, oh man, I better make another video because there are actually people out there depending on this encouragement and this information.
Oh, absolutely. It you become very important to people's days so that they can help make sense of the world. And let me ask you this, and this is a genuine question, and folks, not prearranged or anything, but have you ever experienced any censorship on Brighteon? And I ask that genuinely because if you have, then I need to have a talk with my staff, but have you ever had any censorship?
Well, one time I thought I did, but in retrospect, it was probably, I'm a newbie. I really still am a newbie. If you watch any of my videos, they don't have any subtitles or there's no editing. There's no, you know, cutting or, you know, retaking. It just,
right.
It is what it is. And so, you know, there was one time I think, and it could have been an upload. Sometimes, Mike, tell you the truth, I have to, like the video I made 2 days ago, I had to upload it 4 times. I live in a remote area.
Oh.
And so it, you know, it sometimes will upload and then, but it, then it'll stop and I get an error 503 or whatever. Oh shoot. Then I got to start it over, usually drive down the road somewhere where there's better reception. And so,
okay. So, it's,
you know, if I thought I did get censored one time, in retrospect, now that I'm more experienced, I don't think I did. But in the case I did, I kind of backed off my rhetoric on what I was, you know, you do have to be careful about what you're saying. I don't think I said anything really, you know, dangerous, extreme or volatile, but I kind of toned down.
Well, you don't have to tone down on Brighteon. I mean, no,
I'm actually pretty mild.
But, you are actually pretty mild. Yeah, I mean, you're well-spoken. Now, I've seen complaints from people that saw view counts changing while we were shifting platforms or rolling out, well, like we were migrating our database to a new hardware stack. And some of the view counts moved around for a few hours because the databases were syncing and it went up and then it went down and it was like, God, I'm getting censored. And it's like, no,
yeah, it's understandable.
We're moving the database, guys, you know, chill out. It's okay.
I've had some subscribers, you know, make comments and they say, oh my goodness, I got censored. But no, because they leave a comment and then there's a review process, right? So just because you leave a comment doesn't mean that it's instantly posted. You know, you type it, you hit the button and then it disappears for a little bit and then it comes back. So there's some people that just don't understand it, you know?
That's true. Because if you just let every live comment go live, then it ends up being basically spam and porn postings from crazy people all over the world. That's like every comment becomes spam or porn.
true. I had a couple of those come in actually in the past
did you
couple days.
Oh my. So yeah, we try to keep it, you know, meaningful, right? And but also freedom to speak. So folks, if you want to do what John has done, just create a channel on Brighteon and you will be able to speak your mind as well. You don't even have to agree with any of us, by the way. You can completely disagree. That's okay too.
Well, one thing that I appreciate, Mike, is that when I did choose Brighteon, I chose it because I saw your heart. I heard you articulate your values and basically your that you weren't going to sell out to shareholders and your company policy is not driven by, you know, big corporate interests. And what I didn't want to do is go make all this effort on some platform and then have them get bought out or sold or acquired by somebody else. And then censor me, and then you got to start all over. So
exactly,
I'm not doing that. So I just I found my home right there in Brighteon, and I also I'm just exploring the new features that you put in there last week.
Yes,
and good stuff. Very good stuff. So now you can sort in different ways, and I understand you're putting in something I haven't seen it yet as far as the tokens for monetization.
Yeah,
and see that. I never decided, I didn't launch into this to make any money or anything like that. I just thought somebody has got to say something, you know, and right. That's why I started doing it. And it's just very candid and, you know, just started making some videos. And, you know, if anybody's seen my channels out there, I live in a rural area. My studio is just the forest. I don't have any problems.
No, which I think works great. It's really awesome. I love the fact that you're doing that outside. Yeah. And since you mentioned it, just to add this, folks, we're about to roll out a token tipping system. So end users will be able to purchase tokens, 10 for a dollar, and they'll have tokens in your Brighteon wallet, and you can use those to tip content creators. So you can, you know, donate tokens to videos that you like and help support those people. And then those people get paid in, you know, dollars. And then we encourage them to spend the dollars getting something that won't vanish in the currency collapse.
Yeah.
Right. Like, yeah, here's your dollars, take it and buy gold or something. But
exactly. Yeah.
Anyway, that's coming. That feature is coming.
Well, and that's important. So for me as a new content creator, let's say, it is important because I'm kind of to the point where the channel's gaining some success.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have to make the decision. Well, I'm either going to plateau or I'm going to say, no, I'm going to put more effort into the content and take more time to develop my themes and ideas. Because I really could do that. Right now, it's just, you know, I get fired up about something and I go very candidly. And you don't need any special equipment. It's nice if you have special equipment, but I started out, Mike, as you've seen, I go in the forest, but without even a tripod or anything or a gimbal. When I first started doing this, I just drove a nail into a tree and perched my smartphone on it and got the angle right and all that.
And, wow.
And then sometimes I was actually perching. I was standing up on a log to get the right height. And
oh, wow.
I mean, yeah, you can't see that stuff, right, when I'm doing it, but I mean, so you don't need a lot of money to start just, you know, talking to people. And we need to share our ideas with each other. I get inspired by so many people, and it's so important to that we be able to communicate with each other, the social interaction that happens, you know.
Oh yeah.
We're in a culture right now where they're masking up and kids they're not developing properly. You know, they're having all kinds of developmental disabilities because they don't know how to relate to each other. And this is really an advancement of human civilization, is the ability to connect like this and share ideas. It's like, it really, talk about a force multiplier in an exponential sort of manner. The knowledge just in the virtue too. I'm talking about knowledge based on good conversations, virtuous conversations.
Yes.
This is a positive development for humanity. So hey, as far as
well, quick question. I know you're in a rural area. You have kind of bad bandwidth. Have you noticed one of the new features we have on Brighteon is on any video that's there, I think it's any video, there's a video tab and an audio tab on the top right corner of the video. If you click on the audio tab, you can play just the audio, which means it barely uses any bandwidth. It's just like an MP3 audio stream to your phone.
And that is really important, especially in third world countries. I mean,
exactly.
You know, I mean, I am in a rural area, and that's good. I haven't used it yet, but often, you know, if I'm on a Zoom meeting or something like this, I say, guys, I'm just going to have to go audio because the call will literally die. You know, it'll
yes.
disconnect. You know, so with two bars or one bar, you know, So,
right. We want to have a low bandwidth way for people to be able to hear the videos. And a lot of people don't want to watch anyway. They're just listening to the videos. So why burn up all that bandwidth and even battery life on your phone? Mm-hmm. You know, your phone uses more power to process a video codec, as it's called, versus just an audio codec. So if folks, if you're watching Brighteon videos, you can literally just click on the audio tab, play the audio only, and it will use a lot less power on your mobile device.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm excited about the way things are developing and intend to explore some of these features.
Yeah, very cool. Well, I didn't mean to turn this into a discussion of Brighteon features, but it just went there. So anyway, thank you, John. This has been a fascinating interview and conversation. We appreciate your work very much. I'm a fan of your work. I always, whenever I see a new video from you, I get really happy. I'm like, yes. And so I listen.
Thank you, Mike.
Yeah. I love your work. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And let's do it again.
Okay. We shall. Let's keep in touch. Do you have my mobile number?
I'm not sure that I do.
Okay, then hang on after I stop the recording here, and I'll send it to you on the chat so you can reach me that way directly.
Sure. Beautiful. Okay.
Okay. All right. Thanks for listening. And folks, feel free to share this interview on other channels and other platforms as well. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon.com, and we've been speaking with John Wadsworth from the channel New Patriot on Brighteon. Take care. A global reset is coming. And that's why I've recorded a new 9-hour audiobook. It's called The Global Reset Survival Guide. You can download it for free by subscribing to the naturalnews.com email newsletter, which is also free. I'll describe how the monetary system fails. I also cover emergency medicine and first aid and what to buy to help you avoid infections. So download this guide. It's free. It's my gift to you simply because I want like-minded people to survive.